Sanctioned Russian oligarchs still have money managers. What about them? I'm David Brancaccio in New York. 1 year ago tomorrow, Russia invaded Ukraine. Coming up on this milestone, are sanctions working against powerful, wealthy Russians, the oligarchs? A new paper co-authored by Dartmouth sociologist Brooke Harrington argues these sanctions need to be refocused. Professor, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Do you think that perhaps we should rethink the way that sanctions are targeted? Maybe not just on the oligarchs, but who? The people managing the money?
Yeah, the wealth managers, they turn out to be the hubs of this big international system. And in this most recent article in PNAS Nexus, we show that if you sanction the wealth managers who serve the oligarchs, you get a much more effective sanctions result.
How would it work? Essentially, you're not supposed to have this as a client. We see that he is a client. If you don't get rid of the client, you're in trouble.
Well, although the oligarchs, not just from Russia, but everywhere, enjoy these flashy perks offshore, like the super yachts and the private jets and the villas, they themselves usually don't own those things directly. And they're not figuring out the legal codes of various offshore jurisdictions in order to make sure that those assets are difficult to sanction. All of that is outsourced to this group of professionals called wealth managers. And if you take away the wealth managers from that system, the oligarchs can't easily access their wealth anymore.
And how challenging would it be for authorities in the sanctioning countries to make the link between the wealth manager and the oligarch? It seems like sometimes that's an opaque system.
Well, normally it would be, but one of the benefits of having had these big leaks from offshore, starting with the Panama Papers in 2016, followed by the Paradise Papers in 2017, and then the Pandora Papers in 2021, is we now have a much better picture of these links among oligarchs and their wealth managers offshore. Now, countries like the US or the UK, organizations like the European Union, they have access to this data and more. And all of those entities have begun sanctioning offshore wealth managers.
And we should spell it out. Sanctioning oligarchs is not just about shunning for shunning's sake. The idea would be oligarchs, these tycoons, are influential enough that they might have the ear of people making decisions in Russia and could perhaps alter policy.
I'm really glad that you raised that point, because I think that's often misunderstood. People who oppose sanctions on Russian oligarchs say, look, none of these oligarchs have any influence whatsoever over Vladimir Putin. However, there's a long history of using sanctions to split oligarchs' loyalty so that they no longer adhere to the strongman who depends on the appearance of an iron grip on his lieutenants in order to maintain power. So every oligarch you can chip away, every elite who publicly expresses disgruntlement or disloyalty to the strongman regime, creates a crack in this edifice of autocracy that makes it more likely that that regime will be toppled.
Brooke Harrington is a professor at Dartmouth. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's still generally legal for sanctioned Russians to hold assets in U.S. hedge funds. Let's do the numbers. S&P futures are up 0.4% now. NASDAQ futures are up 0.7%. Remember the soaring price of natural gas? Well, wholesale prices for natural gas are down by 2/3 since December. A new analysis finds that the U.S. government will run out of money to pay what it owes earlier than calculated. This is the fight over raising the debt ceiling. Now the Bipartisan Policy Center, a Washington think tank, says the drop-dead date will come as early as June. Marketplace's Nova Safo is here with more.
Yeah, David, we've had a bunch of varying projections. Last we heard on the subject was from Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, was in January when she told Congress the nation likely won't run out of options before early June. Now, last week, the Congressional Budget Office said we have at least until July. Now we have this projection from the Bipartisan Policy Center. It moves the date closer. And what it's saying is that if the IRS doesn't collect as much money as expected this tax filing season, it is possible that the default date could be as early as June. Now, again, it could also be as late as early fall. So the projection window is unusually wide right now. There's a lot of economic uncertainty, but the default window will narrow as time goes on.
All right. So I guess pay the taxes here.
Yes.
Republicans are negotiating for cuts in future spending using this debt ceiling as leverage. How bad will it be if the money really is allowed to run out?
Well, it's really hard to say with certainty because it's never happened before, right? We've come dangerously close before, and that's not been good. Our credit rating got downgraded in 2011 after another standoff. That means borrowing got more expensive for the federal government than it otherwise would be. Now, coming close again could mean further credit rating downgrades. And generally speaking, the assumption is that a default would likely lead to a cascading set of events that end in higher unemployment and a recession, and potentially a severe recession, David.
All right, Nova Safo, thank you. If your husband or your wife does something bad, you could still be financially liable even if you never knew what they are up to. The U.S. Supreme Court yesterday unanimously reaffirmed that partners can also be left holding the bag and that ignorance of wrongdoing does not get you off the hook. This was a San Francisco case about who pays a $200,000 judgment in a lawsuit involving a house sold to a developer. The husband misrepresented the house, the developer sued, but the wife also has to pay, drawing from an 1885 case. Justice Amy Coney Barrett wrote that, quote, innocent people are sometimes held liable for fraud they did not personally commit. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.